the top stories for the week of November 2nd, 2016. After 3 years, Twitter announced Thursday that it's killing off the Vine short video platform in the coming months. When Twitter launched the micro video feature back in 2013, it quickly became a viral enigma, challenging users to cram as much comedy or culture into each 480 by 480 pixel frame. Users will still be able to keep and view their Vines. In the announcement, Vine says, to all the creators out there, thank you for taking a chance on this app back in the day. Back in the day being 3 years ago.
Long time ago.
The service enjoyed 200 million users in 2015. Some of its biggest superstars include Canadian-born Andrew King Bachelor, with more than 16 million followers, and Toronto-based singer-songwriter Shawn Mendes. Vine videos arguably created its own genre of meme thanks to the hypnotic nature of its six-second clips that loop by default. Vine co-founder Russ Yusupov has little positive to say about the shutdown, tweeting, "Don't sell your company," shortly after the announcement. Yusupov, along with co-founders Don Hoffman and Colin Kroll, sold Vine to Twitter in 2012 before its wide release. I love the little Vine loops, so I am sad. I will watch them always, as long as I can. So hopefully somebody else picks up the company. I don't know.
See, what I don't understand, though, is why they would get rid of it. I mean, this is such a popular thing. I mean, if you look at many social media, there's always these collections of all these great Vine videos. I mean, I think of the one picture of the guy, he's like, story time. And then I'll do all these...
Like, story time? I'm like, hammer time.
Exactly. But, like, I enjoy these videos, so I don't understand why they're pulling the plug. I think it's...
My guess. Twitter ain't making money.
But it's not...
They got to start cutting back. They're letting go of staff. They're letting go of services. They're trying to bring themselves from here and get back up to here, right?
I get that, but then sell it off. I mean, it's still wildly popular.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
we'll see what happens next.
I know a guy who's a Vine star from here in Barrie, but I don't know what he's going to do now. At the ripe old age of like 22, I think he's going to have to get a real job.
He's going to do something that lasts longer than 6 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. Good luck. Can I get your order? I'm at... Oh, sorry. Time's up.
All right. In other news, an 18-year-old has been charged with 3 counts of computer tampering after accidentally swamping Arizona's emergency services with thousands of bogus 911 telephone calls. Meet Kumar Haitubahi Desai told police he had tried to share on Twitter a link to JavaScript code that exposed iOS bugs, making phones freeze or restart. He had hoped Apple would pay him a bug bounty for the information about the flaws, but had mistakenly linked to an earlier version of his app that had made users' phones keep on dialing 911. In a statement, Maricopa County Sheriff's Office said the link had been clicked almost 2,000 times, threatening emergency services across Arizona. Because the 911 service is classified as critical infrastructure, interfering with its operation is treated, in Arizona, with the same severity as human trafficking or second-degree murder.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Talking to police after his arrest, Mr. Desai said the bug he had been planning to exploit had been sent to him by an online friend. Using it, he intended exploiting it to make a benign but annoying app that people would find funny. Writing on the Ars Technica news site, Dan Gooden said the incident contained a valuable lesson for anyone getting started in security research. Hacking devices or networks without the explicit permission and cooperation of their owners is dangerous and can result in significant legal penalties. I would find this funny if it did not actually bring into play the 911 situation.
Yeah.
Because I can understand why it would carry like a second degree murder charge if you are hampering the response time for somebody who's actually in critical need. That's a big deal.
And we haven't heard if anything like that. I mean, how would they know, right? I can't get through to 911 because they're swamped with these
bogus calls.
Calls from a piece of malware. I'm a programmer, and one of the things that, you know, I adopted early on in my programming career is you don't put things into code like automatically dial 911 or, you know, swearing on in or silly things in placeholders, for example, when you're developing something for someone. Because if that ever gets forgotten or you forget to remove it, hello, you should have used lorem ipsum. See, and that's why it's there.
I don't want to be that guy because I know I'm not that old. But as soon as the news started, I hear 18-year-old. I'm going, well, that explains it.
Poor guy.
Like, wow. He's not really...
Oh, sure. Life experience makes you think about these things.
Yeah, ignorance isn't innocence by any means, but there's no way he ever intended this.
That's how it sounds,
Exactly. I mean, when I was in my teens and I was getting into programming and stuff, I mean, I know for myself, I'm like, what all can I do? How far can I push this?
I was writing autoexec.bat viruses.
Well, yeah.
And distributing them at school.
In your teens, you kind of like, how far can I push this? So the fact that the guy is 18, I'm thinking, chances are it was some old file that he created. It was a mistake. If it was, some 40-year-old did it, I'd go, yeah, I don't see that as a mistake. But that's just because I automatically default to ageism to a
certain
degree.
If you're 40, we expect you to know better.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel bad for this poor kid. Criminal record at 18. He can't even get that expunged, I'm sure.
Well, he wasn't convicted, though, was he? He was just charged.
He'll be convicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. He may have a plausible defense.
He needs lawyers like these lawyers in this story.
That's true.
Okay. Uber drivers in Britain should get paid vacation days and guaranteed minimum wage, a tribunal said Friday in a ruling that the company will appeal. The G Megabytes labor union says the decision will have a major impact on the drivers, who argued that they should get the labor rights of employees, not self-employed workers. The Central London Employment Tribunal's decision Friday affects as many as 30,000 drivers. Uber argues it is a technology company that links self-employed drivers with people who need rides. It also says drivers should seek arbitration in the Netherlands, where Uber's European operations are based. Nigel McKay, the attorney representing the workers, argues Uber drivers often work very long hours just to earn enough to cover their basic living costs. It is the work carried out by these drivers that has allowed Uber to become the multi-billion-dollar global corporation that it is. He goes on to say, "We are pleased that the Employment Tribunal has agreed with our arguments that drivers are entitled to the most basic workers' rights, including to be paid the national minimum wage and to receive paid holiday, which were previously denied to them." Uber, based in San Francisco, California, says it will appeal the decision and that in the meantime, it only applies to the two people who brought the suit. Okay, so... those are pretty fantastic lawyers to make that happen.
really, eh?
I think that Uber was always supposed to just be a supplementation to a regular income. I don't think it was ever supposed to be full-time employment for anybody. So I don't know about paid vacation time.
Yeah.
Personally.
See, okay.
This is a Jeff question because he works for the unions.
So. My entire career is delved in labor law. So when this story came out, it didn't matter what was happening around me. There could have been gunshots going off, and I was glued to my phone reading this one. I've been waiting for this decision. Mm. I really have. Ever since Uber came around, I've said this was going to happen. And there's a couple reasons.
It's a fine line, eh?
It is a very fine line, but I think there's a couple reasons for it. And one of them is the fact that it's... they're not entrepreneurs and self-employed in the fact that they're drumming up their own business. Mm. They have a company that is providing the work for them. And while Uber can try and argue that, oh, we're just contracting them out, there's no contractual agreement that says I am a subcontractor to Uber. In the way that it's set up, it's I download the app, I just make it happen. They find the work for me. I work on their behalf. They're the middleman with the money. Like, everything about it to me screams employment.
Does it start to feel like to you that Uber is like the company that is evading taxes by putting their money abroad in a way, but they're doing it through their employees, if you will, the right. people who are doing the work for them. And this is something I've never thought about until this occurred,
when
right?
When you choose to be an Uber driver, you download like the driver app or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I've seen somebody with it. I've never done it myself. But you choose when you want to work. You don't have to work anytime you don't want to work.
Is there a qualification process? Like, there has to be a way. I've never used Uber, but do you have to qualify?
You get a criminal record check, I think.
A criminal record check, which is typical of any
employment. And you take a picture of it. You take a picture of your license, a picture of your insurance, and you upload it to them.
Like an application?
Yes, but you can work for 15 minutes a week if you want, or 15 minutes a month if you want. You can decline rides. You can just straight up say, no, you don't want to do it. What other job can you do that?
Okay, I get that. But the thing is, I mean, if you look at when the terrorist attack took place.
Did this turn to that?
No. Here's where I'm going. In Australia, do you remember the terrorist attack in the coffee shop?
Yeah.
It was a big PR nightmare for Uber because when that terrorist attack hit, they have their software based on demand sets the prices, and the prices skyrocketed to like $100 a kilometer just to get people out of the downtown core when the shots started firing. And so if you are a contractor, chances are you're setting your own rate. Uber is setting those rates. You are just the driver. So when you look at that kind of stuff, Uber's in complete control of every element of that job. The only thing they don't have control over is your hands on the steering wheel.
Hmm.
And so from that standpoint, I look at it and I go, I think it's a very valid argument that they are in fact employees.
Yeah. I work for a company who sets what we charge the customer
mm-hmm.
and what I get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like anyone you know? Rhymes with boober?
But you're an employee.
I'm an employee.
Yes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But so, do you get to decline work? Do you get to decline work?
I get to decline work. If
you
I
do?
Want to decline work, I will decline work. Absolutely.
Yeah. Huh.
I am the red flag
All right.
man.
Okay, so yeah. I'm like 49% on your side.
Really?
Yeah.
You could determine that much? 49%, not 48%?
It's
well, I just
very
I have
accurate.
To give myself a majority on this one, only because I kind of am Team Uber on this.
She's like, I am going to be an Uber driver right after the show.
This has nothing to do with whether Uber is a great service or not.
Sure.
I mean, I'm looking at the fact.
But what are they? What are they defined as?
Right. I don't think that you can be an Uber driver and work 15 minutes a month and get vacation pay.
Sure. No, well, no, because then you'd be part-time.
Okay. Huh?
Okay, but the people who, what's in question here is the people who are putting in 15-hour days like a taxi driver.
Right.
Should they be compensated like a taxi driver?
But regardless, whether they want to be an irregularly scheduled employee that picks up shifts on their choice. I mean, when I worked for the government, I could turn down any shift I wanted. If I didn't want to go in for a month, I didn't go in for a month, but I picked up the work.
Is that just before you got fired?
Yeah, something like that. But, I mean, I was always available to work. I mean, you look at where Uber's going, where they're looking to do Uber Air with flights.
Yeah.
I mean, are they going to say that, I mean, if I'm going to hop into a plane and have them fly me, I can guarantee you,
yes.
I'm going to make
you
sure.
You just sign up to be an Uber pilot?
I hope that they are an employee
that
at that
on the
point.
Hook, because if that plane goes down, I don't want my family suing just some random guy who, you know, crash the plane. I want to make sure that Uber's on the hook. And if you look at, there was a something with Amazon. I want to say with one of the states, if you can't get a hold of, this came out just yesterday,
okay.
I think it was. If you can't get a hold of the company that sold you bad product,
mm-hmm.
you can go after the seller. So does that mean if in this case that they could also go after Uber? I mean, that's a whole nother legal side of it. But I totally think they are employees.
See the comment thing below? See that field down there? Please.
Comment on this.
Post totally your comments.
Employees. I don't think
resolve
so.
Resolve the conversation below.
I think
in the comment section.
Vote Sasha. Vote Team Sasha on this one.
Nope.
Facebook Inc.'s software knows your face almost as well as your mother does. And like mom, it isn't asking your permission to do what it wants with old photos. Facebook encourages users to tag people in photographs that they upload in their personal posts, and the social network stores the collected information. The company uses a program it calls DeepFace to match other photos of a person to match the other photos of a person. Alphabet Inc.'s cloud-based Google Photos service uses similar technology. While millions of internet users embrace the tagging of family and friends in photos, others worried that there's something devious afoot are trying to block Facebook as well as Google from amassing such data. As advances in facial recognition technology give companies the potential to profit from biometric data, privacy advocates see a pattern in how the world's largest social network and search engine have sold users' viewing histories for advertising. The companies insist that gathering data on what you look like isn't against the law, even without your permission. If judges agree with Facebook and Google, they may be able to kill off lawsuits filed under a unique Illinois law that carries fines of $1,000 to $5,000 U.S. each time a person's image is used without permission. Big enough for a liability headache if claims on behalf of millions of consumers proceed as class actions. A loss by the companies could lead to new restrictions on using biometric in the U.S., similar to those in Europe and Canada. Wow. See, I didn't know that we had restrictions in Canada, but I will tell you that that whole, like, deep face technology always mistakes me and my sisters as each other.
Oh, yeah?
So for me, it's just funny because, you know.
Well, and that's pretty small scale. Now, yeah. I have like little Star Trek trinkets around the studio and everything. We used to have a bobblehead that was Spock. So, yes. And I have things all over the studio, like my coaster, right? And it's not just these companies that are doing it. Twitter was experimenting with it for a while there, and I don't see that they still use it, but they must in the back end. I had a studio picture that I posted, and Twitter said Robbie Ferguson posted this with Leonard Nimoy, and it had a tag going to his Twitter account.
Wow.
And that freaked me right out. Like, I was like, okay, that's cool for one thing. The technology is astonishing, but also a little bit creepy, but at the same time...
Creepy but cool.
Creepy but cool. I think it's the next gen of where things are going to have to go for surveillance, and you're going to see it when it comes to, you know, we talk about, you know, the threats that are out there, exactly. And they have to be able to track these things, aka person of interest.
Right. I mean, truth be told, they have CCTV everywhere in Europe, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean,
so
everybody
implement
knows...
this and integrate this, and exactly. Boom.
I mean, there's a little bit, you have to be a little bit worried. I want to use that 23andMe genetic testing, but I'm scared that I'm sending my DNA to somebody who I don't know. I want to know the results.
I know that I'm the guy that for some reason defaults to conspiracy theory and anti-robots taking us over and all that kind of stuff, but I'm not. Why does this one come as a shock? Like, technology is going this way. Why are people freaking out about it as if it's like some big issue? I've known this is coming for a while. Mm-hmm. I think from...
It's science fiction gone reality.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, this is... The
You're
problem
right.
with this situation is we're dealing with it from a legal standpoint and not looking at it from a morality standpoint. And our world, globally, has moved away from the human element to the legal element, and we are now legal entities as far as our own basic human rights. We're nothing more than contractual obligations and
but
do's and don'ts.
Does it violate my rights that my picture is recognized by an artificial intelligence when if I'm standing in a room, Sasha can see me from across the room and say, oh, there's Robbie.
Recognize, no. What to do with you, yes.
What to do with me?
That's the issue. Is they're saying you
like
shouldn't...
Like fly a drone in and
no,
shoot me in
no,
the head
saying,
with a rubber bullet?
This whole thing is saying you shouldn't be able to use my biometrics to earn a profit. And I have to...
It's data. Data is money. That's the currency. Why is Windows 10 free?
Well, yeah, and Facebook is free.
I get that.
Yeah, exactly. That's
rights
exactly
if you
the business
sign up
model.
For something that's completely free. Nothing is free.
You're
selling
agree,
a little
but
of
let people
those
opt
apps.
In.
We talked about apps that
sure.
ask
you,
for all this access because it's a well, free app.
You
well,
can
it needs
opt
those things.
Out by not downloading the app.
Yeah, exactly.
See,
yeah.
And this is the thing. I mean, Facebook changed the way that we do the world. Before Facebook, it was you had to give explicit permissions for anything to happen. And then Zuckerberg and his team came up with this brilliant idea to say, you use our app.
Yeah, you're
you
volunteering
give us free
it. You're giving
reign
it.
On everything, and you tell us what not to use. And
we'll change that halfway through after you said exactly. No. After you've said no, we'll eventually just say yes, and you'll have to go back and find it and say it's no again.
It has changed the legal moral landscape.
Absolutely.
It has changed. Remember back in interrogation, not that I've ever been in an interrogation room, but they used to try and like drag information out of you about who your friends are and where you were and everything. And now all they'd have to do is go on your Facebook and be like, oh, I have a list of all of your friends. Mm-hmm. I know exactly where you've been. I know what you've eaten in the past 14 days. Yeah, they have everything now.
We have pictures to prove it. Exactly. You know, it's not the end of the world, though. I mean, this is the way technology is going. The way that we will know that the apocalypse has come is when robots take over our kitchen. Oh. I mean, it's not possible, right? It's never, ever going to happen.
It's true.
Well, apparently, having a home-cooked meal from the kitchen of Gordon Ramsay could become a reality. In 2018, Moli will launch the world's first fully automated and integrated intelligent cooking robot.
What?
Yes. It's a robotic kitchen that has unlimited access to chefs and their recipes worldwide. And not only can this robotic chef cook over 100 different meals for you, it will clean up after itself too.
Ah, bless you, robot.
According to Mark Olenek, CEO and founder of Moli Robotics, the way this machine works for the end user is by specifying the number of portions, type of cuisine, dietary restrictions, calorie count, desired ingredients, cooking method, and chef, and so on, from the recipe library first. Then, with a single tap, you could choose your recipe, place the individual prepackaged containers of measured, washed, and cut ingredients on designated spots, and press start for the cooking process to begin. Moli consists of all the necessary cabinetry, appliances, and utensils. It starts with two special sensors which record each movement of the actual master chef while they cook away wearing special gloves. This kitchen then replicates the movement with two fully articulating robotic arms and can cook anything just like a human chef. Yippee! Since the Moli kitchen could essentially cook any downloadable recipe on the internet, the food robotics AI startup expects to include a share and sell your own recipes feature, where consumers and professional chefs could access and sell their ideas via the digital style library of recipes database. Designed to work with anyone who has the desire and the ability to cook, this platform for collective creativity and knowledge could become a launching pad for aspiring chefs. While you may need a Wi-Fi for pulling in new recipes, recording a new dish, or sharing your work, the database of recipes that comes with the kitchen is available offline. What's more, the robotic kitchen can always be used manually too. Questions, comments, thoughts?
You know what I think is the first thing that came to mind is what, right? But then I realized, think about educational facilities where the teacher could download these recipes and actually use it to guide would-be chefs to learn. Now, of course, there's the other side of it that says they're going to, you know, Gordon Ramsay can now open 1,000 kitchens around the world and it will be his cooking.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I was thinking more along the lines of having, say, your grandmother make her famous lasagna, and then you can eat grandma's lasagna
till
the end of time, right?
That made me think. See, we're just playing off of each other right here. What about grandma when she can't cook that lasagna anymore, but she loves to eat it?
Right.
Right?
I love this so much.
Oh my gosh,
and
there's so
much
here.
Truth be told, I'm not a great cook. Like, I'm not a super great cook, but I want to be. So this would be great for me. I could just watch this robot cook. And then, like it said, I mean, I can just turn off the arms. And,
not going to happen. No.
Right?
You're just going to sit there drinking your whiskey, watching the robot.
Garçon.
Make me dinner.
Okay.
I love it. How do you feel about this, Jeff?
All right.
Here comes the opinion, folks.
So we know how I feel about robots taking over the world.
This is just the kitchen.
I realize this is just the kitchen. As you're reading the news story, there's one question that's coming up in my head, and it goes back to you made the comment that there's two sensors that watch what the chef is doing. So the question is, in the middle of making a beef Wellington, will these hands drop the knife, flip the bird, and then call somebody a fat cow.
Oh, it's Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, Gordon Ramsay, yes. What have you done with this program?
Like, love can it. He cook any meal without doing something like that?
And, yeah.
Like,
there's no auditory component. That's fantastic.
Robots? Oh, I bet you they'll include it.
Jeff, I will
tell
you.
The other question is, I'm sitting here between Sasha and Robbie, and both of you are talking about replacing grandma with a robot.
Supplementing grandma,
like,
with a robot.
Helping grandma so that she can cook once and eat her lasagna forever.
I do believe it was grandma's lasagna, and then you could have it till the end of time, implying when grandma passes away, she's replaced by robotics.
But you can eat her lasagna. You can pass the delicious taste on.
That's true.
Yeah.
See, why
robots
not?
Are going to win you over, and if they have to do it through your stomach, they will.
But why not just learn to cook the lasagna yourself?
No,
you can't.
Yeah, of course, but there's something about grandma's robot hands cooking you up a lasagna while you sit there drinking your whiskey.
Okay, let's take this on the poutine turn. Okay, so today
careful how you bring up poutine. That is a sacred food.
I know, but what I'm saying is I am talking in the chat room about how poutine is amazing.
Yes, it is.
And they don't get it. They don't get it because they're not from Canada. So what if I upload a delicious poutine recipe?
Oh, sure, yeah. But
right? And then their robots can make it, and then they can understand.
Okay, what kind of poutine are you making that requires robotic? It's fries, gravy, cheese.
Curds.
Think about that. Curds. Yeah, it's got to be curds. But wait a minute. What if you do the poutine recipe, and you did the recording, and it was this nice russet potato, and then Jeff takes it home and loads up the recipe, and he's got this larger potato. And the ingredients and the recipe, the mix, everything is completely off.
I feel like they must have controls for that.
They have controls?
Well,
I could be wrong. Maybe I misheard you, but it did say about prepackaged food and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So essentially, this is nothing more than a glorified microwave.
No. This is fresh food. This is not.
But it said it was prepackaged.
Food.
You can't have prepackaged fresh.
You can go into a grocery store and buy a pre-cut up fresh turnip.
Yes.
Right?
Way easier than cutting your own turnip.
Right. But so now take that and put that on a tray and say, okay, now robot, make me a turkey dinner. And it includes the pre-cut turnip. I don't know.
Can we interview these people?
I still would rather
let's interview them.
Let's interview Moli Kitchens.
Let's get a dozen of these Moli Kitchens and
can we just
distribute them around.
Yeah,
I'd rather make my bowl of Cheerios myself.
Oh, yeah.
Just
from
saying.
Scratch.
Aim high. Reach for the stars.
Mm.
Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Dermatis.